You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world. The shot heard round the world. That's Ralph Waldo Emerson's Concord hymn. Called a hymn, but no religious aspect to it. The shot heard round the world ignited the American Revolution and led to the independence that we celebrate every 4th of July. But before that shot, a preacher delivered a prayer. That prayer is celebrated in this country. It is celebrated in paintings. You've seen the scene, and if you haven't, you probably will in the days around July 4th. It features an old room with red draped velvet curtains and men in stuffy suits and their white wigs, and at the center of attention is a preacher behind a pulpit in a white outfit with a white wig saying a prayer as the founding fathers kneel, scattered about the floor of the Continental Congress, kneeling, beseeching heaven, fervently praying, ecstatic with piety. Really overwrought, really sugary, certainly didn't happen that way. Tompkins Harrison Madison painted the first prayer in Congress in 1848, some 75 years after the event it purports to show. That prayer is celebrated. That prayer is celebrated in our law. The Supreme Court has used that prayer from 1774 to interpret the meaning of the Constitution today. A prayer from a time when the Constitution was still pretty far off. A Constitution that wouldn't become the law of the land for another 15 years at the time that prayer was given. Supreme Court justices have cited this preacher and his prayer to justify congressional chaplains, which we pay upwards of $1 million for every couple years. They've used it to justify prayers before legislative sessions, before government bodies, government prayer. And they've even used it to justify a 40-foot-tall Christian cross on government land that is maintained with taxpayer funds. Jews, atheists, Hindus, even Christians that object to public displays of piety, government displays of piety, are paying to maintain that cross. This prayer from 1774 affects your rights today, in other words. Now, the jurisprudential logic of those decisions is just wildly flawed. But unsurprisingly, so is the history. As with much American mythology, especially American mythology that involves religion, we've only heard part of the story. We're told of the chaplain and his prayer, but not of his treason. That's what we're going to dive into for the first part of the show today. The chaplain and his treason, because he was, without doubt, a traitor. Nothing is more dreaded than the national government meddling with religion, mused John Adams when he was reflecting on his failed re-election bid in the 1800 election. As president, Adams was not good about separating church and state. He mixed the two. And he ultimately blamed that mistake, mixing church and state, for his electoral loss. Government meddling with religion. Adams had called for a national fast, which was a government overreach, which he believed, quote, turned me out of office. But when the First Continental Congress met in Philadelphia back in 1774, Adams lacked the benefit of this hindsight. And without it, he and the other delegates at the Continental Congress appointed a chaplain, Jacob Duché. And we know how that's how you pronounce it. It's spelled D-U-C-H-E with an accent over the E. But we know how to pronounce it because Duché, they pronounce it, Adams wrote in a letter. So Adams and the other delegates appoint Jacob Duché, a chaplain, to say a prayer. Now, the story of Duché's appointment and prayer come down to us from one of John Adams's many letters to his wife, Abigail. And this is what he wrote at the beginning of his story. Quote, when the Congress first met, Mr. Cushing made a motion that it should be opened with a prayer. That's how Adams begins the story. And much like Adams's electoral loss after meddling in religion, Thomas Cushing himself was ousted from the Congress the following year, though more likely for his opposition to the colonies declaring independence, which is important because, you know, we're talking 1774. Cushing, the guy who wanted the Congress to pray, didn't want the United States to be independent. It's important to note that's where we are. I'll elaborate on that a little bit more. Now, Cushing's prayer motion, Adams explained, quote, was opposed by Mr. Jay of New York and Mr. Rutledge of South Carolina. Because we were so divided in religious sentiments, some Episcopalians, some Quakers, some Anabaptists, some Presbyterians, and some Congregationalists, so that we could not join in the same act of worship. Mr. Jay and Mr. Rutledge there are John Jay and John Rutledge, whose opinions here we might want to take into consideration because John Jay would become the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and John Rutledge would become the second Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and they opposed the prayer because the Continental Congress was religiously diverse. And the more diverse a company is, the greater division religion will sow when it is injected into it. It is best to remove religion from that political equation. Our framers eventually enshrined that idea into the Constitution. Now, most of you have not heard any of that, if you've heard any of this story, because it's usually what comes next that is the first bit of the story that we get to. Because Sam Adams gets up, and here's what John writes. Sam, quote, Adams arose and said he was no bigot, and could hear a prayer from a gentleman of piety and virtue, who was at the same time a friend to his country. The motion passed. Now, when we hear that story today, it's often used to suggest that people who oppose elected officials abusing a government power to impose their religion on others are the bigots that Sam Adams was disclaiming. There's a few things to note here. First, Adams had an important qualifier on his who can say this prayer, who was at the same time a friend of his country. That turns out to be probably the most important part of that recorded phrase. But this also ignores the fact that This was still a British colony with an established church. That's what we're talking about. All the colonies, 13 colonies, this years before independence was being declared. Remember, Cushing would be turned out of the Continental Congress because he opposed independence later. The British colonies were not independent. And many of them, not all of them, many of them had an established church at this time, especially back in 1774. In 1776, you do start to get certain colonies separating church and state. Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. But really, the U.S. Constitution would not invent the separation of church and state for another 15 years or so. But the other dimension of the story, not just the fact that there was no separation of church and state then, was that friend of his country language. And that's an important dimension to this story, because the prayer was not born of piety. It was not born of religious considerations. It was born of political considerations. The delegates here had carefully selected Duché in order to influence a large sect of people, believers, that was relatively unsupportive of American independence. Duché was an ordained Episcopal clergyman, and he presided over a loyalist congregation. But he was willing to at least affiliate with these soon-to-be rebels. And in a way, provide a blessing for the congregation, right? The Continental Congress, the Congress, bless the Congress, even though he was maybe not as firebrand as some of them, right? The work that they're doing here is okay. Otherwise, why would I be saying a prayer over it? That's why they wanted him. Sam Adams only approved of Duché because he had, quote, heard that Mr. Duché was a, quote, friend to his country, despite being part of King George III's church.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
In other words, this wasn't about the delegates, you know, joining hands in pious worship, and certainly not, as the painting reflects, you know, just beating their breasts and tearing their cloth and kneeling in this fervent, ecstatic prayer. This prayer proposal wasn't as much about religion or about the delegates as it was about politics. This was real politic. It's what I refer to in the founding myth as strategic piety. And this is something that can be found throughout the founding era. And in fact, a lot of the things that people want to use to suggest that we're a Christian nation was really just strategic piety. And John Adams actually records this in his diary. He records the observation of another delegate, which confesses this. The other delegate says, according to Adams, quote, "We were never guilty of a more masterly stroke of policy than in moving that Mr. Duché might read prayers." Policy! Not piety, policy. So for those people who want to portray the United States as a Christian nation, that is where the story ends. The story ends with Mr. Duché's prayer and never grapples with the fact that this was a political stunt. But this is also where the story just starts to really get going, where things really start to get juicy and you can start to sink your teeth into some interesting history. In 1777, the British captured Philadelphia. And Mr. Duché, Reverend Duché, spent one night in jail before turning coat and forsaking America. John Adams writes in a letter to Abigail, "Mr. Duché, I am sorry to inform you, has turned out an apostate and a traitor. Poor man, I pity his weakness and detest his wickedness." Apostate and traitor. The traitor who gave America prayer, right? Not my words. John Adams called him a traitor and an apostate. And Duché was. He condemned American independence. He condemned the Continental Congress. He condemned the soldiers fighting for independence, all in a letter to George Washington that you can go read today. Duché assured Washington that his political apostasy was genuine. He was not coerced by the British, and that the letter expressed, quote, "the real sentiments of my own heart, such as I have long held." And Duché explained that he had only agreed to be a chaplain for the Continental Congress out of self-interest. Quote, "to procure some favorable terms," end quote, for his position and his church. So in effect, Duché was saying that he was using his religion for political ends, just as the Congress was using him and his religion for political ends. This was political all around. Had nothing to do with piety. When our founders later chose to separate church and state, they did so in part because religion and government will both exist in greater purity the less they're mixed together. Such an important line from James Madison when explaining this. And this prayer is a fine example of that failing. Politics has infected religion. Religion has infected politics all the way around from both sides. The preacher was using his religion for political gain. The politicians were using the preacher's religion for political gain. And now, down to this day, it's infecting our politics. In his letter to Washington, Duché called on the Continental Congress to rescind, quote, "the hasty and ill-advised Declaration of Independence," obviously meaning the Declaration of Independence, which he then goes on to liken to idol worship, before vilifying the Continental Congress as a group of, quote, "illiberal and violent men." Now, I get it, right? Nobody likes a politician. You can kind of sympathize with Duché here. And yes, this was a guy who had been arrested by the British and thrown in jail for one night. But remember, these were the sentiments of his own heart, the real sentiments of his own heart, such as he has long held. Duché then turns his pen on the U.S. Army, that same army that celebrated its 250th anniversary with the miserable parade to Dear Leader Trump, the squeaky wheel. Duché turns his pen on them, basically calling them cowards. Quote, "a set of undisciplined men and officers, many of them having been taken from the lowest of the people, without principle, without courage." He's calling American soldiers cowards. The Reverend Jacob Duché was a traitor. He was a traitor. He thought our army was full of cowards. He thought the Declaration of Independence was hasty and ill-advised. He thought Congress was illiberal and violent men. These were the sentiments, the real sentiments of his own heart that he'd long held. Now, on the same day that Jacob Duché penned this quizzling letter, General Benedict Arnold was trouncing the British general, John Burgoyne, the Battle of Saratoga. Now, Arnold's treachery lives on. It lives on in infamy. Arnold's name is synonymous with traitor, but Duché and his treason is forgotten. Or is it? It's not that it's forgotten. It's that it is deliberately ignored so that Duché's prayer can be venerated. The story of Duché is truncated so that Christian nationalists can point to a, quote, "long history of government prayer to justify violations of America's original contribution to political science, the separation of church and state." And federal judges repeat the religion and ignore the treason all the time when they use Duché's Prayer to Interpret Our Constitution. Justice Samuel Alito, one of the bitterest members of the entire federal bench, and a man who is just shockingly angry for somebody who is winning everything they purport to want in this world. Justice Alito uses the Duché story to uphold a 40-foot concrete cross on government land maintained with hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer funds. Alito actually spends an entire paragraph on the election of Duché as chaplain without mentioning his name or his perfidy and treason. This is what Alito writes. Thus, when an Episcopal clergyman was nominated as chaplain, some Congregationalist members of Congress objected due to the diversity of religious sentiments represented in Congress. Nevertheless, Samuel Adams, a staunch Congregationalist, spoke in favor of the motion. I am no bigot. I can hear a prayer from a man of piety and virtue who is at the same time a friend of his country. Others agreed, and the chaplain was appointed. And if you read the rest of that opinion, Alito really leans into the bigotry. Anybody who's for the separation of church and state is a bigot. This is where he likens essentially the separation of church and state to the French Revolution, people going on a crusade to go around and cut people's heads off. The Supreme Court did the same thing back in 1983 when it upheld Christian prayers before legislative sessions, right before Congress, before, in that case, it was actually involved in Nebraska, but it used the prayers before Congress, the Continental Congress, to help. This was a 6-3 opinion, and the 6-justice majority really uses Duché's prayer as a kind of cornerstone to develop this narrative of a long, unbroken history of government prayer. And that's really untenable when you look at the history. Duché's prayer was certainly the first. But here's how they developed the narrative. Quote, the Continental Congress adopted the traditional procedure of opening its sessions with a prayer offered by a paid chaplain. And this decision, Marsh versus Chambers, it really marks a shift in the high court's jurisprudence. This is one of the first times that the court elevates history and tradition, which is now a driving methodology at the court. This is one of the first times where it elevates history and tradition over legal principle in the Constitution. And look, I mean, the underlying legal question here is really, really simple. And the dissenting justices are kind of mind-boggled by this. They write, they had, quote, no doubt that if any group of law students were asked to apply the principles of the Constitution to the question of legislative prayer, they would nearly unanimously find the practice to be unconstitutional. Of course they would. If you want to pray, go pray. You don't get to abuse your power and impose prayer on everybody else. You don't get to abuse the power of your office, the prestige of your office, to promote your personal religion. That was 1983, but now, venerating history, bad history, and tradition over legal principle and the Constitution is common. This is one of the major tactics for the ultra-conservative bloc of justices who control the Supreme Court. They do the same thing with all of the right-wing fetishes, guns and abortion and privileging Christianity. And the end result here is obvious. It's, in fact, the goal. They want to drag us back to a time when straight, white, conservative Christian men ruled. When they ruled over women. When they ruled with violence. When they were the special, privileged, favored class and everybody else was second-class citizens. And the history is bad. I mean, the history here is truly bad. Because the Constitutional Convention meets in Philadelphia in 1787. That's 13 years after Jacob Duché prays. And while the Constitutional Convention met in Philadelphia in 1787, that convention rejected a prayer that was proposed halfway through the proceedings. And this, again, this is something that you hear commonly from Christian nationalists. They talk about the prayer proposal at the Constitutional Convention. Ben Franklin, they say. This atheist, this secularist, this godless heathen, Ben Franklin, even he says we need to turn to prayer and recommends that they pray. They don't tell you that in Ben Franklin's own hand, you can see this annotation on the Library of Congress website, quote, except for three or four persons, thought prayers unnecessary. Everyone except for three or four persons at the convention, quote, thought prayers unnecessary, according to Ben Franklin's own hand. And also, by the way, it's no coincidence that those proceedings, the Constitutional Convention, unlike the Continental Congress, at which Duché prayed, were secret, right? This is where they had all the doors and windows shut despite the Philadelphia heat, the summer heat. Because to have political value, strategic piety must be public. In private, when they're drafting the Constitution on their own, they don't need prayer. They don't care about prayer. It's only when they are trying to use religion to move a public needle that they are doing this in public. So Duché prays in 1774. The prayerless Constitutional Convention meets in 1787, and the Constitution is ratified 2 years later in 1789. So when Duché prays, there was no United States of America. The colonies themselves had not declared independence. There was no godless constitution drawing its power from we the people rather than a deity or a king. The First Amendment to the Constitution would not be ratified for another 2 years, 1791. There was no separation between church and state. Certainly no constitutional separation between church and state. So you have judges and Supreme Court justices whose sole job is to interpret and apply the U.S. Constitution, regularly using a prayer from a decade and a half before that document existed to interpret that document. It is fucking mind-blowing. And courts that have upheld prayers at government meetings do so by elevating history over legal principle. And it's not even that accurate history. It's incomplete, half-forgotten, suppressed. Jacob Duché betrayed American independence. This is the man who the Christian nationalists hold up as an avatar of this country being a Christian nation. When you hear these unconstitutional legislative prayers before government bodies all over the country, remember that they are not a legacy of a long, hallowed tradition. They are a legacy of treason and betrayal. That's how they started, with treason, and they betray the American Constitution. They are at heart un-American. So happy 4th of July, America. And if you didn't know this history, if this is new to you, please share this with your family and friends. America's not founded as a Christian nation. If you want to dig deeper into this, highly recommend you check out The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. I also wrote a law review article on this called Bad History, Bad Opinions, talking about prayer at school board bodies that gets into some deeper history and has all citations, though so does The Founding Myth that you can want. But please share this with your family and friends. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts, Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.